From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and usually each week we deal with issues related to mental health from a holistic perspective, which means balance in body, mind, and spirit. Last week, if you listened in, and this week and for the next 2 weeks, it is my goal to do what a lot of conservative talk show hosts is, and that is support social issues that we believe in from our own perspective. And so I'm giving over the four shows before the elections to support the Kerry campaign and to help win 10 electoral votes for Kerry from Arizona. So here we are airing in Phoenix. And this is a live call-in show, so if you're listening in the Phoenix area, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the Internet, as I know some of you are because I get your emails, it is a toll call, but it's the same number, and you're welcome to call in. That's 480-949-1310. Now, if you listened last week, you heard me quote from an article I wrote called Election-Related Depression, a New Diagnostic Code. This is an article I wrote right after the 2000 election, and you can actually find the entire article on my website, Tell the Truth Faster, interestingly enough, under the heading Articles. And the article starts out with a quote by Bayard Rustin, and it goes, "History is not an accident. History is a choice." And in the article, I refer to that quote and talk about the choices we make today, the choices that we focus on today create the history we're living with tomorrow. And I, of course, wrote that in relationship to the last election. And to read another paragraph from this, the last election, and I quote, "The last election had a profound effect on the emotional well-being of many in this country, black and white, gay and straight, men and women. People were disenfranchised, disrespected, made to feel powerless, unworthy, hopeless, and pessimistic for the next 4 years, and wondering if the last eight had even been real. It was not unfamiliar to an eight-year drug high and the crash as the euphoria starts wearing off. I'm writing this to urge you, my colleagues and friends, not to ignore the symptoms of this election-related depression. I thought to call it Bush-related depression. However, in all honesty, I have endured the loss of my favorite candidate in other elections when it was a very clear victory. I would have accepted Bush, however, begrudgingly, had he won with all the votes counted and a clear consensus. I am actually quite surprised by my inability to move on. I will not move on as if nothing had happened and as if nothing needs to be done." When I was in Florida last weekend for the concert for Kerry with the Dixie Chicks and James Taylor in Clearwater, I had a couple of Kerry Edwards t-shirts that I wore deliberately throughout the weekend. And I was actually quite amazed and pleased with the amount of support that I got in, I think, Tampa being a relatively Republican and conservative area, how many people came up to me to thank me for publicly wearing that t-shirt. One woman actually came up to me and said at a flea market on Sunday morning, she whispered to me, "I'm really glad that you're wearing that and I support Kerry." And she said to me, "But I'm afraid to put my lawn signs out." And that was very telling and very scary, even to the effect that on the news the next day in Sarasota, a house was actually vandalized that had the Kerry signs out on the lawn. Now, at the same time, there seemed to be a real high positive energy around Florida and carry voters. So I'm hoping that there are enough people still focused on what happened in the last election year that the electoral votes in Florida may actually end up in Kerry's column this year. And speaking of electoral votes, we're now dealing with Arizona, who many people assume is going to be won by Bush. But from what I hear with all of the people from California and other areas that have moved in to Arizona in the last 4 years and the high level of registrations by Democrats, that it's a tighter race than most people give it credit for, and that's why I'm doing these shows. So with all that being said, I really want to thank my guest last week, which was Stuart Starkey, who's the Democratic candidate for the Senate from Arizona, running against John McCain. And I want to thank my guest today, who helped arrange Stuart for being on the show, and her name is Sue Wolitzki. She's the Arizona Communications Director for the Kerry Edwards 2004 campaign. And Sue is somebody who is not new to politics and not new to campaigns. She's worked under a lot of past Democratic campaigns, as well as Democratic National Committee, and did some work under the Clinton administration. So without getting into too many details, and I'll let her fill in a lot of the gaps, Sue, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I really, really appreciated your efforts last week and for appearing this week also. And in looking at the bio that you had sent me, I was really impressed with how long and you've been in Democratic politics and all the things you've actually done. What I often like to do is start out on a more personal level with my guests. And in your case, how did you get involved with politics? Why did you get involved with politics? What motivated you initially, and why Democrats?
Well, I certainly want to answer that question. Let me go back to one thing you said in your opening, and then I'll talk about how I got here.
Sure.
Arizona very much is a battleground.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 10 years, the population in Arizona has been growing. Arizona is the second fastest growing state in the country. Mojave County is the second fastest growing county in the country. So the population is changing. As you said, a lot of folks coming in from California, folks coming in from the East Coast and other parts of the country. The Latino population is booming, now at 25% of Arizona's population. The demographics here have forced a change in the politics. And so, you know, this is no longer, I don't think Goldwater Republicans would really be as comfortable here as perhaps they were. It is moderating. Still, you know, a conservative streak, but I think in a small C, and very much a battleground, probably seeing right now the strongest and the largest opposition campaign it has ever seen in its history, with folks all over the state working hard, working, you know, 24 hours a day, it seems, out trying to get other people to vote. Right now we're in early voting, and it is incredible the numbers we are seeing in terms of Democratic strongholds and folks who are sending in their requests and sending in their ballots. So the polls are actually tightening. What we've seen in the last week or so, especially with John Kerry's strong performance in the debates, is that things are tightening. And, you know, the debates gave us an opportunity to see the candidates side by side, unfiltered, talking about the issues. And that's what Arizonans wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to see it tighten even more. We see it tipping over to John Kerry, just like Bill Clinton won the state in 1996. So
great. Well, here's hoping, and hoping that this show and the other shows they do this month have a little bit of impact on that.
In terms of how I got here, I started quite some time ago with College Democrats of America, and went to school in Washington, D.C., and got involved in College Democrats, worked with the national organization as well, and wound up working at the 1992 Democratic Convention. And from that, met some wonderful people who told me, time is, time is on your side and you need to go work the campaign. And so I went and I worked on the campaign in 1992 for Bill Clinton and Al Gore, and just had a tremendous time. Arizona was one of the states I was responsible for. I was a desk officer, meaning that I stayed back at a headquarters and facilitated events and information flow to other states. And Arizona, along with other western states, were part of my responsibility. After just a tremendous election, went on to work at the inauguration, and then went in to spend 8 years with the Clinton administration, working in a variety of communications positions, mostly in national security.
Very good. Now, why Kerry? Is it specific to Kerry or specific to Democrats?
Well, it's a little bit of both, actually. John,
talking about your own motivation.
And that is for my own personal motivation. As a Democrat, I believe that George Bush has really taken this country down a path we were never meant to be. And having been a part of an administration for 8 years and seeing how fast they have just destroyed the progress that was made in terms of just the economy and how we deal with countries overseas, and getting casualty reports every day from Iraq, all of those things lead me to want to change where, you know, who is heading this government. John Kerry is someone who I know from my years working in national security. I know that he has been a leader in that area. I know that he is coming to this office, coming to be President of the United States with more experience than most previous presidents, and will be more prepared for what the world and the country has to throw at him. And his level of experience and expertise, when you combine that with the experience, the life experience, as well as the time in the Senate with John Edwards, it is a powerful combination. And having seen a president and a vice president work together in Bill Clinton and Al Gore, I see a similar dynamic between John Kerry and John Edwards. In the two of them, in the way they motivate their staff, myself included, just to get out there and make a difference, to play fair and to really help people better their lives. Because when you go into public service, that is one of the reasons why you are doing that, to be helping others succeed.
It's a lot of the reasons that I think a lot of people get into politics, because there's something close to home that hits them. And last week I read more from that article that I quoted from at my opening, and I was in college from 68 to 72, so we're talking all the Vietnam stuff that's all back in the news today. And a lot of people are criticizing Kerry for being a veteran of Vietnam and coming right back and starting to work against the war, and they're seeing that as unpatriotic and all that stuff. A lot of people who were not around during that era, I mean, to me, it's an amazing thing for somebody that close to it to have come back from a war that was not, that was actually dividing this country as much as Iraq is today, and to take a stand so clearly, to go before Congress and to testify about it as a veteran. You know, a lot of people who didn't live through that era, don't really get how divided this country was and what a red flag the whole Vietnam thing was at the time. And to me, it took a lot of courage on his part to be able to come back having experienced it and not just to have been somebody who never was over there, whose only experience is what he was told by the government, who we now know was lying to us about a lot of stuff then anyway, and to really take a stand. And that there were a lot of veterans at the time that were coming back very disenchanted, the same way that we hear these leaks of stories about veterans coming back from Iraq who were not particularly happy with the situation there. And people get confused that by not supporting the war, it's like not supporting the troops. It's like all of us support the troops, and that does not negate the fact that we don't support the war. So, to me, one of the things that the Kerry campaign has not done real clearly is to really differentiate his stand in terms of being a very patriotic veteran at the time and making a decision based on his own experience and his own conscience. To me, he deserves a lot of respect for that, and yet he's getting a lot of criticism for that.
There are a lot of veterans out there who served honorably during Vietnam, many of whom came back disillusioned, did not really do much about it. Some did. I actually went to school during a period when the first Gulf War was happening, and General Tony McPeak was the head of the Air Force at the time, and the Air Force being sort of the major component of the first Gulf War. He was in Arizona just a month or so ago, and he was in the military during Vietnam. He had an interesting thing to say, that he views John Kerry as being a hero in two worlds. John Kerry is somebody who, finished an Ivy League education and could have gone on to just about anything else, but yet volunteered to go into the Army, volunteered to go into the military, serve overseas in Vietnam, volunteered to go into an assignment that really was one of the most dangerous ones out there. And he did it. And he is a hero for what he did in Vietnam and all of the different things he did just by going there and serving, as well as some of the other individual incidents that happened. When he came back, General McPeak also viewed him as a hero of the anti-war movement, someone who was willing, had the strength and the courage and the character to stand up and say, what we are doing, what I was just a part of, is not right. And I think that there are military folks out there who perhaps at the time didn't agree with what John Kerry was saying, but understand right now that it took character and strength to say it and to do it. And that same strength and character carries forward today. And it is important to be able to view what happened 30 years ago in context and then understand what's important now, that you've got to find a way to help, millions of Americans who need assistance, who need health care, who need jobs. On the other side, you've got a president who, at a time when I guess he was defining his character, he was, being helped into the Air National Guard and staying stateside, and whether or not he actually showed up all the times he needed to show up are still in question. That character carries through today when he still is looking out for those who looked out for him, those special interests, those in the top 1% of the country. And, so in some respects, what happened 30 years ago happened 30 years ago. But it definitely carries over into the character and how people deal with situations today. And I happen to like the way that John Kerry defined his character 30 years ago and is carrying through with that today, as opposed to where George Bush is. And I think there are many veterans out there, many of whom who served in Vietnam, you know, with Kerry or not with Kerry, who understand that and can put it in that context and understand where you need to look at the activities that happened 30 years ago and where you need to say, okay, those happened, and you know, you can't go back and change history, but let's try and change the future.
Mm-hmm.
And work forward on that. Right now up in Tuba City is retired captain, Navy Captain Wade Sanders. Wade served in the same unit as John Kerry, actually, I apologize. Before, I think I said that John Kerry was in the Army. He was in the Navy. He was
right.
A lieutenant. Wade Sanders is up in Tuba City visiting with the Western Navajo Fair. Wade Sanders, after they were in the military together, was roommates with John Kerry back stateside and has known him since that time. And understands the values, the character, the principles that John Kerry has held for 30-plus years and has been going around the country in places like Arizona. This is actually his second time back to Arizona to talk to veterans and to talk to others. And when he sits with veterans, what we found during his last visit, some of them have questions. Some of them, you know, perhaps are even angry at John Kerry and what he may have done 30 years ago. They know that it took character, and they know that it was a sign of strength for what he did 30 years ago, and it is for what he wants to do today and where he wants to take the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out to these programs in support of John Kerry. They still have questions. They still want to just sort of get these things, you know, put to rest. But they understand the context, and they understand, again, the character and the strength that it took 30 years ago, and that same character and strength it takes to be commander-in-chief and to be president.
Yeah, and I think what people keep forgetting, especially if you didn't live through the period, is what an insanely emotional time that was. And everybody was, it's like I, you know, in the article that I wrote, that the piece that I read last week was, you know, in 1968 I went to school as a freshman that was totally naive. We are all raised to believe our government never lies to us and it's always doing the right thing. And it took 2 years in the invasion of Cambodia for me to finally wake up and actually realize something's wrong here and to get out and start protesting along with a lot of my friends who had already been out there. And I think something similar is going on here. I think there are a lot of people who want to look at Bush and his folksy smiles and winks of the eye and say, hey, you can believe me. And yet the one thing both wars have in common is both of them are undeclared wars. Congress is the only ones that have a right to declare war, and both of those wars were never officially declared by Congress. Am I right about that?
I think that sorry about that.
Okay.
If you could just repeat that about, you sort of broke up there a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry. You know, that one of the things that really cause a lot of the conflict is that Congress, according to our Constitution, is the only ones that can declare a war. And one thing I think Iraq and Vietnam have in common is that, you know, both of them technically are undeclared wars.
Well, I think what you saw with Iraq is that the Congress, including John Kerry, gave the president the authority to, it gave him the authority to go and go to the UN to try and bring other countries along,
mm-hmm.
To really use all means necessary, but that meaning diplomatic, and that meaning trying to not go it alone,
right.
But to bring other people with the U.S.
Right.
And what this president did was he really tossed that away,
right.
And took advantage of what the Congress had given him,
mm-hmm.
to you know, to then just take the country down the wrong path. I do want to mention, you talked about the country being divided, you know, 30 years ago. I think the country is divided right now, and a lot of that can be traced back to this president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Republicans have tried to co-opt things like the flag. And I think what John Kerry does is he stands up and says that, you know, the American flag belongs to all Americans. It is not just a Democrat, or it is not just a Republican thing or a Democrat thing. It is for all Americans. And for Democrats who feel like, you know, it's the Republicans who have sort of taken ownership for patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that John Kerry stands up and says, you know, that isn't true. This is for all of us.
Mm-hmm. So with that statement being made, why do you think this campaign is as tight as it is?
Well, I think that, you know, this administration has been running a campaign based on fear ever since 9/11. And they do not have an agenda, a record to go on in terms of domestic issues. They really don't have much positive to say in terms of international issues. So all they could do is keep Americans scared, is to, you know, raise and lower the, you know, take us to orange and yellow and back and
right.
forth, and, you know, tell us in terms of emergency preparedness kits. And, you know, let's save the world with duct tape. That's all they can do. And when you play with people's emotions, it's a hard thing to break through. And I think that, you know, because there are such strong feelings about what needs to be done to move America forward in the right direction, that's where you get. I mean, this country was divided in 2000, and I think that continues. And I think the way that this administration has been playing with fear and using that as a campaign tool, I think, causes some of this to happen.
Right. I call it Georgie One Note. You know, like the old song Johnny One Note. It's like even in the debates, it seemed to be that was the only thing he could return to.
Well, I mean,
same
the president.
Way in the third debate, where he answered almost everything by going back to No Child Left Behind.
Yeah. I mean, the president refuses to admit that, you know, there isn't a connection between Iraq and Osama bin Laden. You know, he outright lied when he said that he never spoke out to say that he wasn't worried. I guess Bush said in the debate, I never said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that he, you know, in 2002, he said, we haven't heard much from him. I wouldn't necessarily say he's at the center of any command structure. I don't know where he is, and I'm not that concerned with him.
Mm-hmm.
There is just a disconnect, and Bush is not living in a, you know, the same reality as the rest of us.
Well, what do you say to the swing voters, or the undecided voters, in terms of why they should be looking at Kerry, and what can you say to get them off the fence? I mean, it's hard to believe 2 weeks before the election people still are sitting on a fence with so much at stake, but I do understand that sometimes people just see both sides of an issue. What do you say to them?
There is very much at stake, and I think that could be the reason why so many people would still be on the fence. But I think that it's because, you know, there are these high emotions out there, and what we need to do is think carefully. And for people who are still deciding, I would think about what the term security means. Security is not just national security and homeland security, but it's economic security. As Americans, we need to feel secure that our country is safe, you know, that we can travel where we need to travel, and go to work and not feel like we are in danger. But we also need to pay our mortgage or our rent. We have to make sure our kids can go to school, and, you know, we'll come home at the end of the day. We need to be able to put food on the table. And so all of these things are extremely important simultaneously. And I think that, you know, for anyone who is still considering what to do, they need to consider that. And this president has been very, he has been very much of one mind, and he has allowed the economic security of this country, the economic security of our children and our grandchildren, to really fall apart. You've had 5 million more Americans lose their health care. 1.6 million Americans have lost jobs. More have lost jobs, but you've got a net loss of 1.6 million jobs. You know, in Arizona, family income has dropped by $1,500. In Arizona, also, we've lost 39,000 manufacturing jobs. Insurance premiums for Arizonans for a family has gone up by about $3,700. All of these things are extremely important. And you have to consider, as you started off the program, a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes for a good president.
Right.
And this president has not accomplished that. And, you know, it's a job interview. If you have experience and you've had 4 years to show whether or not you can perform, and you haven't, you know, someone else has to have a chance at the job. Because if you, there is no dress rehearsal here, there's no practice run. George Bush has had 4 years and really taken this country in the wrong direction. He has harmed our future. He has put our kids and their future at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that, I think, needs to be considered. At the same time, we have John Kerry, who has some solid plans on the domestic front as well as on the international front. And I think there's something to be said about a fresh start and what we can do to accomplish our goals, you know, in terms of cleaning up the mess that is still in Iraq and trying to regain the respect that helps us around the world, not just in national security issues, but in trade issues you know, in other economic issues.
Right. You know, one of the things that is like this, you know, catchphrase or media snippet is the Democrats are tax and spend, which I don't necessarily believe. But nobody's pointing the finger directly and saying, well, the Republicans obviously are borrow and spend. And
yes.
In a country where there's such credit card debt and that this country is based so totally on consumer credit and to move the economy, and the bankruptcy levels are as high as they are, the federal government's hardly setting a good example of fiscal responsibility by borrowing and spending and borrowing and spending. To me, that's more dangerous than at least, you know, putting a tax here or there in order to pay for things as you're spending for them and actually not creating the deficit that we have. You know, it's like borrowing and spending to me is so much more dangerous a place to put our country in and so much worse an example to set for the masses than anything else. And like you said, it's leaving a legacy for our children and grandchildren who are going to have to bear the brunt of that debt. You know, so in terms of the national debt, you know, what is Kerry looking at in terms of how to reverse that trend?
Well, all of the proposals that John Kerry has put forward have included pay-as-you-go,
mm-hmm.
Meaning they identify sources to help fund the programs. And, you know, a big chunk of this that's going to help fund some of the programs is peeling back the tax cuts on the top 1.5%
right.
Of Americans. That's going to bring in about $860 billion. And that money, you know, the extra the tax cut going to that top 1.5% that was put in place, they're not actually, I mean, they're not spending that money. Those folks in the top 1.5% aren't going out to buy, you know, that extra TV or, you know, that new car just because they got tax cut. If they wanted a new car, they were going to go out and get it anyway.
Right.
What John Kerry wants to do is enhance tax cuts for 98% of Americans and 99% of small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes a look at things that will actually help the economy, like tax cuts for college tuition. In Arizona, the tuition at ASU and U of A runs about $4,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally, with John Kerry's plan, it would have a tax cut of up to $4,000 a year for college tuition, thus making an in-state four-year college degree affordable, accessible for any student who wants within Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty incredible. And if you get more people, if you can increase the students who are going to college, their earning potential will go up. And so you're making an investment in the present as well as the future. And there are other tax cuts that are targeted towards businesses as well as the middle class.
Well, I think also something that is just not being reinforced enough is, you know, Bush keeps talking about the tax break he's already given, you know, to the middle and lower classes and all that stuff. But the expectation was that that money would go into consumer purchasing and things like that to move the economy, when the reality of it is most of that money has gone into paying higher gas bills, higher electric bills, higher tuition bills, higher grocery bills, and everything else. It hasn't really gone in to move the economy. It's gone into a higher level of survival mode for those groups, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, the pinch to the middle class has been incredible. I mean, a few hundred dollars tax cut from this administration balanced out against what you said in terms of health care premiums going up,
mm-hmm.
wages going down. All of this really takes a bite out of what income they can actually put into the economy.
Right. So the reality of it is the only ones that really were able to do more consumer buying with their tax cuts was the upper class to begin with.
Yeah, and, you know, again, they're not going to change their spending habits just
right.
because they got, a couple thousand dollars more tax cuts.
Mm-hmm. Now, other issues that are dealing with. I know that with the debates, with the vice presidential debate as well as the third debate right there in Tempe that I know you were somewhat of a part of, I have to raise this issue because as a gay man, you know, when the issue came up about gay marriage, which I totally understand the political stance that both candidates, you know, take on that, but for Kerry to have spoken about Cheney's daughter who's a lesbian, and to get the backlash she's getting when this is something that had been on the table, it's not like she's a six-year-old child. I mean, it's not like, children of presidents and candidates who are adults have always been on the table. And for the Cheneys who have spoken openly about, you know, Mary Cheney, to come back at Kerry as if he had done something horrible when, as a gay man, I was totally getting the point that he was making, which is that they love their daughter, that they respect the values of family and who she is as a human being, even when they keep her out of the spotlight, which I think is demeaning.
Well, the thing is that I think that John Kerry was pretty clear and made it clear afterwards that, you know, they have a strong family. The Kerrys have a strong family. That's sort of an important part of who they are and how they Mary Cheney is a part of that. I think the biggest shock perhaps for Lynn Cheney was that somebody actually said it out loud.
Right.
Mary Cheney has been pretty open and active for quite some time.
Right.
And I think the problem was more again, for Lynn Cheney, that perhaps someone, you know, spoke that. It just seemed the outrage was in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, John Kerry was showing this as a sign of strength of a family. And, you know, the fact that Dick Cheney and Lynn Cheney would be upset, obviously, you know, it probably is of more harm to their family, because obviously they just didn't want somebody to repeat it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the first debate, Dick Cheney actually thanked John Edwards,
right,
for his kind words about the Cheney family. And, you know, what political calculation the Republicans made after that, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if anybody's using, you know, a family member as a political tool, then, you know, perhaps it's on the other side.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I did during the conventions, and thanks to C-SPAN and TiVo, I actually watched gavel to gavel the Democratic convention, and in order to be fair, I did the same thing with the Republican convention. And after Cheney's speech, I went looking. You know, the cameras didn't stay on the stage all that long, but it's well known that Mary Cheney and her spouse were not up on the stage.
They were there, though. They were there.
They were there in the auditorium.
Yeah.
But families usually come up in mass after the acceptance speech, and her sister was up there with her young kids and husband. But Mary and her spouse,
I think that probably was a decision on Mary's side, and
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, you know, read too much into that. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it's an issue that the Republicans have for months trying to use gays and lesbians as a wedge issue.
Definitely.
You know, the president, by putting forward supporting an amendment to the Constitution that everyone knew had no chance of passage.
Right.
They truly just wanted to use it as a political sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really all it was.
Well,
and
actually, I think part of it backfired,
because
I think there have been people out there who may not be for gay marriage, but were aghast that the Constitution would be used.
Oh, there are many conservatives who think that the president's casual, you know, usage of the Constitution and using it as a political prop was just out of line.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not agree with same-sex marriage, but they, you know, they believe that the Constitution should not be amended,
right,
for this purpose.
I want to move on to the issue around seniors, because when I was in Florida last week, for the Dixie Chicks James Taylor concert, which, by the way, was an incredible concert, one of my mom and her boyfriend flew over from the east coast of Florida to visit with me while I was there, and my mom has a friend of hers, one of her closest friends, who's 89 years old. Her name is Eleanor, who lives in a independent living retirement home in Clearwater. So we went to visit Eleanor, and I was wearing my Carrie Edwards T-shirt, and she said, "Can you get me one of those?" You know, because she said to me, "This building is a bastion of Republicanism, and I want to walk around in that T-shirt." This is a real gutsy 89-year-old. She's an incredible woman. And, you know, I came back to California to find a Carrie Edwards T-shirt, and I had to go to 5 different campaign offices before I finally found one, which is a good sign that they're selling out.
Well, I'll tell you, they're pretty hard to get here in Arizona. The
well,
posters, the signs, you know, as fast as the Republicans can take them off of people's lawns,
mm-hmm.
people are putting them back.
Yep. I told you what the news had about the vandalism in Sarasota of a Carrie, of a home that had a Carrie sign out front. But I want to get into the issue of seniors because, you know, I mean, I'm 55. I'm only 10 years away from potentially Medicare and all that stuff. And I asked her, and I asked my mom, too, who's 81 years old. Her boyfriend's 87. How do you feel you're being treated as seniors in terms of Medicare, in terms of, you know, the, and in fact, I asked Eleanor specifically what their thoughts are on this prescription drug thing that Bush's campaign is touting as the greatest thing since sliced bread. And she says it's going to be nothing. How many seniors are getting that? How many seniors are seeing this as...
The administration really... Sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
The administration has really done, you know, just a total charade when it comes to prescription drugs. What they did was they put together, you know, for the near term, a discount card that, frankly, you can get lower prices at Costco or online than what you can get with these. Thank goodness in Arizona we have the copper card that shows that you actually can do a valid prescription drug card that can help seniors get lower prices, and this administration doesn't seem to know how to do that. And then what they do is they say, well, in 2006, we're going to give you a real thing, which isn't really that great.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't help too much. I mean, this administration has blocked the federal government from negotiating lower prices for prescription drugs. They have blocked efforts to re-import drugs, which to me is the most absurd thing. We make the drugs in the U.S., we import them to other countries, and in order to get them at lower costs, we have to bring them back from other countries. They start here in the first place. I don't understand why they're more expensive here than they are overseas.
In other words, why can't those drug companies just sell them here in the States?
Exactly.
They're still making a profit selling it to those other countries.
Why do you have to go through the expense and the time of sending them overseas just to get them back here? And why are they cheaper in other countries? Well, maybe because they're doing something different with their health care system.
Mm-hmm.
And this president could tomorrow do something about that, and so far has refused to do so. I mean, we've had people in Arizona who have been arrested in Mexico and detained because they were picking up, you know, insulin and other drugs for their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not the way that any civilized country should be treating their elderly people. But you know what? Prescription drug cost is not just an issue for the elderly.
Right.
I mean, this is for people of all ages. Mm-hmm. The life-saving drugs we have should not be out of reach because you can't afford them.
Well, I have plenty of clients and friends with HIV and AIDS, and unless they have private insurance or they're on Medicare or Medicaid, and even when they are on assistance and some, I have a friend in Florida who has AIDS, and he's nearly had his prescriptions cut off twice and had to jump through hoops in order to maintain what the doctors say he really needs in order to live. And twice he had to risk and stress through that whole process of bureaucracy in order just to maintain his life-saving medications. And this is part of the federal program that I'm talking about, as well as Florida's program. You know, so it's not, you're right, it's not just the seniors, it's people with HIV, it's diabetics, it's almost anything, people who with cancer who need their meds for chemotherapy and all sorts of things. And yet, some of these people, some of the seniors are again, getting back to coming from a generation of veterans and feeling, you know, we need a strong America and thinking in Bush in those terms. What do you say to them to balance out their inner conflict of their social needs and their health needs with what may be a holdover from World War II patriotism? You there?
Yeah, sorry. The veterans, their needs?
Well, I'm talking about the seniors who come from that World War II mindset of you know, we support the military, we support a strong America, and yet they're seeing that more than they're seeing the devastation of social policies related to seniors.
I think that our seniors, perhaps more than any other constituency group, age group in our country, understands how the government can help. They cannot replace, but how they can help and support the public as they, you know, as they are trying to succeed in this country, whether it be support for income and retirement, you know, just getting the proper health care, helping with their kids. They understand the role the government could play, and the Republican notion of, you know, big government is bad. Democrats don't want big government for the sake of big government. They want smart government.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, our seniors have seen how the government can help move this country forward and spur private investment and spur growth in private sectors, because they've seen it happen. They've seen the engines of this economy being pushed along and helped along by government help. They've put in their time and helped this country grow, and I think they don't like to see it all go down the tubes. And, you know, they may not be, you know, working 80 hours a week or 60 hours a week as some, you know, younger Americans are, but they have put in their time, and they deserve the respect back from our government and our country. And I think that they, more than anybody else, sees the impact that the policies of this administration have had on the country and where it's taken it. And I think they, more than anyone else, have the right to be disappointed in where George Bush has taken this country.
Yeah, I agree. We only have a few minutes left, Sue, so if there's anything else I haven't asked you or any point or, you know, that you want to leave our listeners with before we close this afternoon. And I really, truly want to thank you for your help with getting Stuart last week and for your time. I know you're a busy woman these days. You know, your time on today's show, and I look forward to whatever guests you assist me in getting for the next 2 weeks. Any final words that you want to share with our listeners?
I think the important thing is to get out and vote. Go to places like johncarey.com or azdem.org, O-R-G, and learn about the issues, educate yourself, and get out and vote. And everybody is busy, and so you have the option of voting early or vote by mail. So, you know, there's no excuse not to be voting, whether you do it on Monday or you do it, you know, on November 2nd. Either one, it's important. Your vote will be counted. We're going to work to make sure that your vote is counted. And, you know, just get out there and vote. And obviously vote for Carrie Edwards.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for, too. And again, Sue, I really, truly want to thank you for taking the time today. And hopefully these shows are going to help get some clarity for some of Arizona's voters and people listening via the Internet. So for those of you that have been listening to my show, have listened obviously today, if you want any more information on how to support the Carrie campaign, or if you want to make some comments via email, you can go to my website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com. That's tellthetruthfaster.com. And if you want to listen to any of the shows I've done over the last 3 years, I've archived every one of them, and they're all free of charge to sit and listen to via the Internet. So feel free to. And last week's show and this week's show will be up on those archives within the next week. And we'd love your comments and your support. And I echo Sue's words, get out and vote. This is a democracy, and it only works if you work it.